Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Super Mercado Bros. Video Game Music Podcast.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. It's time for another original showcase installment. This is the podcast where we share and discuss the very best in video game music, sometimes our own, sometimes from others. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann. Yeah, like Carl alluded to, today we're going to be playing all original music. So this is all music composed by either Carl, myself, or a combination of the both of us.
So that means you can turn the podcast off right now. No, I'm just kidding. I think you guys, some of you guys, I think enjoy these installments. We have a blast with them.
Yeah, just because it's one of those inevitable times to show off.
So, okay, if anyone isn't familiar, we do have some new listeners. We started this podcast about four-ish years ago.
Almost five.
And before we were podcasters, it's kind of crazy that we are that now, we were composers first and musicians. We have been for years. So one of the interests that we've always had and passions is video game music. And we compose music for indie games. We have a lot of different homage albums that we've made. So one of the things that we thought was a cool crossover idea is that once a season, we don't do it all the time, we have an episode kind of checking in with you guys, letting you know what we've been up to in the music we've composed. And this is, for the most part, video game music. There's some things here and there that aren't specifically video game music.
Right.
Like, you'll hear that today. But for the most part, I would say my sensibility, and definitely Will, we just can't help but write music that sounds like it belongs in a video game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think nowadays, I mean, the kind of soundtracks that we're getting in modern games are every bit as sophisticated as, you know, any other type of music, and that in films. So yeah, a lot of the stuff today is sort of like chiptune. Maybe it's inspired by older video games, and a lot of it...
Such as what we're hearing right now.
Right. A lot of the stuff is composed just originally for games. And other stuff that we're going to do has really nothing to do with video games, and it's just other kind of original music that we've been up to.
I don't think I said the number, but it's Original Showcase 9. Can you believe that? This is the ninth time we've done this. So this is our ninth season. We're wrapping up our ninth season. That is absolutely crazy.
This is our ninth season?
Yes.
Oh, wow. The last like four just snuck up on me.
Isn't that crazy? So every 25 episodes. All right. So, Will, what was that playing track? That was a track of yours.
Yeah, that's called Shells, Stars, and Super Mushrooms. It's from an album I made a couple years ago called Dear Mario, which was sort of a tribute to Koji Kondo, but specifically the NES Mario titles like Mario 3, Mario 2. I can't believe I haven't played that yet, but that track is sort of like the main overworld in my mind of that kind of make-believe game that I was scoring. That's the overworld. And yeah, so it's weird to me that I never played it, but when I looked back at some of the previous original showcases, I think that was just a particular time that year that we were really prolific and busy, and so we had a lot of other stuff that we were sharing.
Well, I think we're going to keep the ball rolling, and now we're going to move on to a track that I composed, and I'm excited because this is going to be released fairly soon. Actually, Will and myself will have the simultaneous album release coming very soon, sometime this summer. The album that I'm going to be releasing is called Back in Orbit, and it's a fusion instrumental album that has a lot of video game influence in there. And this track I'm going to share now is actually the first track off that album. It's called All That Fuss from Back in Orbit. Enjoy.
Thank you.
guys are listening to All That Fuss. This is the first track off of my upcoming album, Back in Orbit. This was one of the two tracks on the album that features real bass guitar that I played. This is mostly synth other than that. You're hearing, this is kind of a nice little example of the sound that I was going for this album. Very jazzy, very fun and groovy. It's definitely something that you can't really escape when you listen to it. You can, oh, this guy likes video game music.
Sure.
Sonic, yeah, specifically.
I had the privilege of actually getting to listen to this album this past week, and I really enjoyed it. I think my favorite part was the album artwork. You know, it's just really tastefully done. No, I actually do like the artwork, but I'm just kidding. Yeah, there's so many groovy, funky, just awesome tracks. If you're a fan of Carl Brueggemann, you will not be disappointed with this album.
Thanks, man.
It really kind of feels like your natural calling, I guess.
It was very natural. Yeah, it wasn't anything that I had to like challenge myself to. Oh, I don't know if I can do it. It's just, yeah, this is a kind of music that if I was just left alone in a room for weeks, it's gonna happen. Like, I'm bound to just write and perform music like this. The one thing that was probably what I challenged myself most with was probably the production. And like, for example, this track actually playing real bass, trying to make it authentic and kind of gel with everything. So there were aspects of the project that I was kind of trying to stretch out and go outside of what I've done before. But yeah, I think I'm proud of it because it kind of feels like classic Carl music, but it's maybe a little bit more
sonically pleasing.
Yeah, just maybe a little bit more direct and for some reason, I guess authentic is what it feels like.
Sure.
For me. So,
and like presentationally, you know, it doesn't require a lot of context. Where like some of the other projects we've done, it's like, okay, to listen to this album, imagine you're in a world where this game didn't exist, yeah, and in its place, you know,
the
it's
year
like,
is 1991,
right?
But it's not really. Yeah, it's
right.
2014.
This album needs no backstory.
Well, I think we're moving on to a track of yours, right?
Yeah, this is an orchestral piece that I started working on probably, I don't know, sometime last winter. And I recently finished it about like a month ago this summer. And I'm really happy and proud of it. I recently submitted it to this film and video game music competition where, you know, the winner gets this sort of internship in Los Angeles. I don't really have any assumptions about what'll happen to it, but it's just a piece that I'm really excited about. It's very kind of filmy.
Well, you know what I love about this is going from that to this. This perfectly represents our different styles
in what we've been up to.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Recently. Yeah. So this is a piece called Serendipity. Let's take a listen. Thank you. Cool. We're listening to Serendipity. This is an original orchestral piece that I wrote. And unlike some of the other things that I may have shared before on the podcast, the intention of this was not really to have it performed or for it to even be like a piece of concert music. It was really meant to kind of have this film music sound, and that's why I kind of have that piano-centric melody that almost sounds like it was like overdubbed, or it's very sort of brought up in the faders, which is something you wouldn't get in like a piece of concert orchestral music.
Yeah, it kind of seems to me like you were trying to show people that this is a part of me that I want to share. You know, we're also going to be launching websites for, you know, you're going to have your own website, I'm going to have my own website, and this is the kind of piece that I feel like is going to be the first track that you would have on that sampler. Like, this is like an example of modern film music, but it's very melodic and spirited. And it's just like, it's a good showcase of your compositional style, because it feels familiar, you know, it feels like things we've heard before, but just that strong sense of consistent melody is something that is not all that common in modern film music.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think there are great tunes in a lot of modern films, but yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I think what I kind of wanted to capture with this piece, and I think a lot of the music I do, is sort of like I don't know, combine the simplicity in the melody reminiscent of composers like Koji Kondo with kind of the I don't know, the elaborate and sophisticated orchestration of classical composers or even like John Williams.
Absolutely, I can hear that. It's such a delightful piece of music.
Thanks.
I already love the diversity of the playlist, and it's going to continue. It's good that there's two of us, right? and that we're so different, really. You know, I think one of my favorite things working together is that we can meet in the middle, and we do share a lot of similar tastes. But when we're left to our own devices, it's interesting to see what we kind of choose to do with our time. It's just different places.
Have you been spying on me? What do you mean by that? Explain that crack again.
You have a secret fusion album that you just don't want anyone to hear.
I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed of my drum parts.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Okay, so we're going to move on to a track of mine from my album that came out last fall, Tone Bank. And Tone Bank was an album that I made entirely with an old Casio keyboard from the 80s that we actually grew up with. So when I was a kid, that was the first thing I ever played on. And so I made the whole album recorded with those sounds. And this is a very groovy piece of music called Stick Around, once again from Tone Bank. Let's take a listen. You guys are listening to Stick Around. This is from Tone Bank, which was released last fall. It's an album of instrumental, I guess some sort of sound chip was in this. I don't know what the sound chip was in that old Casio, Kind of has elements.
It's probably a Yamaha.
There are some of the patches that sound FM synth to me that kind of have a Genesis sound. Some of the patches sound more like SNES samples. So it's just kind of this like broad, kind of vague retro sound that right. is so nostalgic to me, and I thought was cool because it's not super familiar to most people. So my hope in releasing this album was that it was going to feel fresh and new. And again, sure. these are new songs that people haven't heard, but something about it, I wanted people to feel that nostalgia at the same time.
Well, right. It's very retro. I mean, it either sounds like an old computer console or, you know,
some
early
actually,
MIDI.
What's weird is, yeah, some of the tracks ended up kind of having a PC 88, 98 influence when everything was said and done, which is cool. Yeah, this was the second track I wrote for the album. The first one I wrote was Ancient Heart. That kind of Japanese, more traditional one. And yeah, this was the second one. And I definitely wanted the album, a decent amount of it, to have this kind of a swung, groovy, like jazzy energy.
Sure.
And it's interesting how that energy did kind of spill over into my next project, the Back in Orbit project. There is some similar energy that is kind of maybe carried over from Tone Bank, I think.
Absolutely. And I mean, what I think is interesting about a lot of our albums is we almost find extra musical excuses to write in the style that we so love. Because the reality is, it's like music does require a context, especially if you're writing in kind of a bygone style.
Sure.
But it's so fun. And what I thought was great about Tone Bank, it was sort of an excuse for you to tap into music that's very sort of core to what you're all about.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way that we hadn't done before. You know, it's not really a tribute to a specific composer, and it's not using the gimmick of a video game.
I think
sound.
Part of that is because it wasn't ever planned. I literally sure. was up in the attic and I was just saw it and I was like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen this for years, and plugged it in. And the first thing I played was the Ancient Heart riff, and it was like, oh my gosh, I want to take this back to my house and write songs with this. And it was so much fun.
Isn't it funny though, because I remember being a kid when we had that Casio and
we really wanted
a better keyboard.
Yeah.
You know, because we knew it was so limited, and now coming back to it, and it's like, I
the
don't know, it's almost the coolest keyboard that we have.
Over time, my glasses turn rose-colored.
Right.
Over time, it's crazy. So we're going to move on to a track of Will's, and this is so funny because we each separately had the same idea to kind of surprise the other person with something. I'll tell them about mine when we get to it, but this is Will's piece of music.
So yeah, what happened is, I think maybe I didn't mention this, but I had an opportunity to listen to Carl's new Fusion album because Marty and I were in sort of like a car trip. We were going down to his studio, and so we were listening to the album on the way. And while I was there at their studio, they have this really beautiful piano. And so I just found myself really kind of drawn to it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, these melodies and things were coming to me. And there's this one that I wrote that was, you know, kind of like Dorian and medieval. It felt
kind
very
of Final
video
Fantasy-ish.
Game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in my mind, I'm just like, oh, this sounds like it's right out of like Final Fantasy or Chrono Trigger. So then I thought, you know, we're doing this original showcase. It'd be fun mm-hmm. if I, you know, sort of quickly prepared an SNES track to surprise Carl with. Little did I know
I had
that
already
he
done
had, like,
the same
the same kind of idea.
Yeah, I actually, when I was writing Back in Orbit, there was a track that I wrote a few months ago and it didn't quite fit, but I really liked it. And the more I listened to it, the more I realized this is an SNES track. So both of us ended up kind of doing, for me it was like a Terranigma meets Chrono Trigger sound. For you, I think a little bit more Final Fantasy meets Chrono Trigger.
And I think
I
luckily
say.
For you as the listener, they're both very different.
They are both.
It's
different.
Just kind of a fun little story. So I guess without further ado, let's take a listen to my piece In Days of Old.
Thank you.
listening to a track of mine called In Days of Old.
This is so beautiful.
Oh. Thanks, man. This was sort of inspired, like I said before, by Final Fantasy, Chrono Trigger. But the reality is the melody just kind of came to me. Like, I wasn't even at the piano. Mm-hmm. I just kind of heard it in my head. And I went to start playing it. And I'm like, oh, I guess it's in A minor. And I started developing it. And as soon as I was playing it, it kind of was clear to me, like, it's either some kind of, like, modern orchestral filmy piece, or it's very like video gamey. And once I decided that it's like I want this to sound like Uematsu, or you know, very Japanese, I kind of went all out in that direction with
the
subsequent
sections. That for me, when I first heard it, it felt like Uematsu meets Kohei Tanaka meets Joe Hisaishi.
Sure.
Or is exactly what it
felt like to me. Yeah, that was my thought process.
It's so great. I love that March section here when things kind of really come full circle. And
yeah, it's almost like it becomes intense. Like a Terra's theme version of this melody.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so great. And it was so fun hearing it because once I heard this, I was like, yes, our pieces are so different from each other. But also at the same time, and we'll get to mine later, but I feel like they could probably coexist in some imaginary, like, JRPG or something.
Sure.
And part of that comes from, you know, having a similar sound set. But, oh gosh, yeah, this is so fun.
Yeah, there were some struggles, actually, with ripping the samples, because Final Fantasy and Chrono Trigger and a lot of those RPGs, they use a lot of the built-in SNES reverb, which makes it very difficult to the process that we do to make those SNES tracks is ripping individual samples. So you have to find really clean attacks and everything that don't mm-hmm. have other note decays in them.
Well, now we're going to move on to a track of mine. This is a piece of music that is for an upcoming Sonic fan game. I've been involved in so many, it's hard to keep track, but this one was, I believe, called Sonic Neo Genesis.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think it's still being worked on. But they asked me to write a few pieces. The first stage in the game is one of the things they wanted me to write. It's called Tropical Madness Zone, and this is Act 1, so I wrote two pieces of music. The Act 2 is a completely different thing. So this is the Act 1 of Tropical Madness Zone. Enjoy. You guys are listening to Tropical Madness Zone Act 1. This is a track that I composed for Sonic Neo Genesis, and the designers of the game specifically wanted something with modern instruments. They did not want Genesis instruments, but they wanted the tone of the music to feel kind of retro and old school and kind of colorful. So that is what I tried to deliver to them. So yeah, I'm pretty happy with this melody.
There.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I think this melody is because the Act 2 I actually made first, and that one is a little bit more rhythmic and kind of minor key and groovy. And so for this one, I wanted it to be, you know, it fit the what this act was a little bit brighter and happier.
Yeah, this is wonderful. I know that I've heard this before, but somehow, like, on first listen, I don't think I appreciated everything. This is just really stellar. Fun because it captures a little bit of your kind of Sonic-y sensibilities, mm-hmm. but honestly, not even just the production, but the composition just feels kind of so new and fresh, and really just, it sounds like Carl Brueggemann, which to me is synonymous with Sonic at this point.
Where does Carl end and where does Sonic begin?
That's true.
That's so funny. Yeah, no, it was cool also to to try to do a sonic track that didn't have Genesis instruments, because that actually freed me up a lot to go in different places that I wouldn't have gone if I was restricted. Because part of the thing is, like, when you're working with the FM instruments, you also have a tendency to want to just restrict yourself to voices too. If you have more than 8 voices on the Genesis, it kind of doesn't really sound right. Whereas here, I can really, there wasn't that limitation. So, you know, you're able to have different chords than you probably would have, and just kind of, you know, different lines and things like that. So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Well, the next thing I'm moving on to is something I'm really excited to share. It's a really fun piece. You know, this past semester, I worked on a couple different film projects. I scored these student films through my university. I was matched up, and I worked with different groups, and I composed music for them. It ended up being a lot of work, you know, to take on that many projects that I had to work on in a short amount of time.
But yeah, I remember talking to you that week. It was super crazy.
It was really a wonderful experience, and it gave me the confidence to know it's like, oh, I really think I can do this. But what was so fun about it is that all three of the projects were so different in terms of their musical needs. Some of them, you know, were more like score, and something like this was a great opportunity because they were really specific. They tasked me with one assignment that I didn't even have to see any of the footage. They said, give us a piece that's about 2 minutes that has the kind of campy feeling of the old 1960s Batman theme song. So I kind of went down this rabbit hole of kind of exploring that kind of like jazzy, bluesy, tritone-y thing that happens in... that happens in that theme, but also like Spider-Man and the Cowboy Bebop theme, and a little bit in like Incredibles
for sure.
So yeah. I was listening to a lot of old television music from the 60s and 70s and trying to analyze it. And so I wrote this piece, kind of my take on that whole world.
Let's check it out.
And it actually features Marty playing saxophone. But yeah, this was just a whole lot of fun to make. So let's take a listen to The Bad Man.
That is swanky stuff there, folks. The Bad Man. Yeah. From the Bad Man himself, Will B.
Yeah, tune in next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Same bad time.
Yeah. No, yeah, but that was just so fun to make because it was a great opportunity to kind of explore a compositional style again, which is something that I hadn't really done overtly since really our tribute albums, but I noticed it's like, why does all this music have the same progression? And all the melodies kind of are either outlining a triad and they have that one raised interval.
It's something I noticed. I wrote a song in college for a band I was in called Devious. The song was Devious and the melody was that same kind of a thing.
Sure.
And it's like, once you notice that, it's just... it works, and it all, like, every time you do it, it's like, it's hard for someone not to smile when they hear that. Like, I remember when we played that song Devious, like, everybody got the kind of wink in the nudge of what it was in reference to. And especially, I remember Andrew, our guitarist, he would play it, and he would kind of play it in a way that felt like it was like James Bond or something.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, there's that kind of, there's something about like that music from the 60s and 70s, whether it's TV show music or, you know, the Monty Norman James Bond theme or anything by Henry Mancini or Lalo Schifrin.
Sure.
There's like a specific, I mean, it's not just like a style, but it's very specific musical characteristics, even in terms of the melody. So that was just a lot of fun to make and explore a type of production in a genre that I'd never done before. So that was just a great opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, now we're going to move on to a collaborative track. This is a Super Mercado Brothers track from an upcoming side-scrolling game called Asker. And this track is Atlantis Stage, and it's a piece of music that we're both really proud of. Probably one of the coolest things I think we've done in this project so far.
Yeah,
really
absolutely.
Excited about
we
this track.
We played
track.
A couple things before. I think last mm-hmm. time we played stuff, there wasn't, I think, a working title of the game, maybe.
Yeah, we've played like Hades Underworld and a couple other tracks here and there. But yeah, this is Atlantis Stage, composed by the Super Mercado Brothers. Enjoy. How we kind of got reggaeified in that last section, kind of get to a reggae pop feel.
Right.
This is a lot of fun to work on. This is Atlantis Stage from the upcoming side scroller Asker.
Well, I know something that was important to me in this track because, you know, in this project, the way we sort of divided the roles is something we've done before, where Carl more handles like the groove elements, drums, bass, sometimes mm-hmm. chord structure, and I handle more like the melody, chords, like meat yep. and potato-y things. And Carl's also more responsible for the production, and it's fun because we work on it together. I'm kind of, I don't know, famous for having like melodies with A section and B section. And I thought right. for this, it'd be really fun to have kind of like, because that intro riff Carl came up with, and I thought mm-hmm. it was just so catchy that it, you know, it's a really great riff that it would be awesome if this track kind of had a verse chorus
sure.
feel as opposed to like A section.
And that ended up working so well. And then what I was really happy about the track is that when it comes back, a lot of video game tracks have this quality, when it comes back to that intro, it feels stronger.
Really satisfying.
It feels
yeah.
like, yes, this is what needs
to happen. Well,
because
it fulfills a dual purpose. Like, it's like the energy at the end of that chorus could really utilize something like this. So when coming back to it, it's more satisfying. And you've also heard it before, so it's more memorable. But yeah, this is probably my favorite thing we've done for that album, because the thing that I'm happy about is that I really like that chorus melody. I think it's catchy, but I also really like the verse melody. So I was able, I think one of the reasons I'm drawn to like A section, B section stuff is it mm-hmm. kind of feels like you're putting your best material right up front.
Sure.
And then sometimes B sections are this really fun kind of expression of maybe exploring like a sequence based on a fragment of that melody. But what was great about this is, you know, I don't know, the intro is catchy, the verse is really catchy. You have that like pre-chorus classical B section that's catchy mm-hmm. and then the chorus, and it's like it's still a really short form. And so I don't know, this was just a fun opportunity to get to do something collaborative.
It was very fun.
I was just really happy with the result.
Well, now we're going to move on to another track of mine from Back in Orbit. And this is a track
really, guys, such great album artwork. You won't be disappointed.
Thanks. This is a track called Cool Wave, and it's one of the probably the breeziest, happiest tracks on the album. I really like how this one turned out, so please enjoy Cool Wave. Guys are listening to Cool Wave. This is funny. This is a track that could have been featured last week on our summer music episode.
Yeah.
Kind of has that vibe. I didn't write it in the summer, though.
You know, what I so love about it is I think when I was listening to this album, I was expecting a lot of, you know, kind of minor key, really kind of funky, badass sort of groove based stuff. But like, I don't know, like when the melody to this happened and that glockenspiel happened, it was just like, oh my gosh, I had no idea you were gonna go for such a
sunny
not just sunny but sort of like an earnest and sweet type of vibe on this album, because I don't know, when I think of you as a person and even like emotionally, you seem like someone who's very kind of like close to the chest.
Sure.
And doesn't like indulge, you know, I mean, for
there
years
are times.
Carl never even hugged me.
I used to not be a big hugger. I've become a big hugger as of late.
Yeah,
there are times when we can
several girlfriends for that, but
there are times when I can be very, I don't know, sunny.
No, yeah, but honestly, it's like one of my favorite types of musical expression from you, when you kind of let out that positive energy. It's like,
sure,
you tap into this really,
well, recently,
I mean, summery kind of thing. It's just beautiful.
It's fun to do that too. And you're right, I don't do it all that often. Recently, I was tasked to compose a song for my friend's wedding, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another example, an occasion where I just tried to make something as happy and as sweet as I possibly could. So,
and then,
it's,
you know, when they get
that
divorced, you can do a, like a really somber.
How
kind
dare
of
you? All right, what do we got next from you, bud?
Well, I'm going to play another piece from Dear Mario. This is one that I know that you really liked. This was one of your favorites.
I also cannot believe you haven't played this.
Yeah, again, I think it was just, we were so busy at that time because we had just finished Mega Buster. I did Dear Mario, and then we were working on Fireflower at the same time, and then I was also working on Child of the Chozo. So I, like, we just had
stop
a lot of stuff to share, so I haven't had an opportunity to play this. But this is a track called Underground Caves, and this was my attempt at doing an underground piece. It was one of the things that I was really worried about when working on the album, because, you know, the original Super Mario Brothers Underground is so kind of strange musically. And
you
and
didn't
unique
really feel like you needed to just do a Xerox of that.
Yeah,
it's very
or something
different. It actually
in that style
is much closer to Yoshi's Island Underground.
Right. So the things I looked at were really what kinds of things Koji Kondo expressed in other entries of the series for an underground that wasn't just using the doo-da doo-da doo-da. So one of the things I was looking at was in Mario 2, the kind of underground music in there, and also Yoshi's Island. So I wanted to do kind of like a swung kind of a thing that felt reminiscent of that cave theme in Yoshi's Island. But so it's kind of like a mix of those influences. And also, this was like one of the few opportunities on the album where I kind of just got to let loose and kind of create in a new style that wasn't necessarily super reminiscent of a specific track.
I think it was one of my favorites on the album because it was groovy.
Yeah. Let's take a listen to Underground Caves.
Super groovy. You know what I love about this track, Will, is it feels like there are times when you're letting out your inner Fallen, like with some of the pitch sliding and just the rock riffs. It just, the Fallens, I think, would enjoy this track.
Well, you know, it's fun. It was sort of, this album, in a way, was sort of like the height, and that whole summer was like the height of my skills as like a FAMI tracker person, because I worked on Mega Buster where I was doing it, and then I was working on Dear Mario, kind of dovetailed with that, and then I was doing the underscore to Fireflower, which that really was a lot of hard work in terms of trying to explore different things with sounds and timbre just with those NES sound channels. And then also I did Child of the Chozo, which was sort of similar. So like I think I was really kind of I had almost like taken for granted some of the things I was doing, that they even were kind of like maybe stretching the limits of the NES, because honestly for Mario I just wanted to do something more straight ahead. But I think you can tell kind of the remnants of some of the things I was learning with volume and pitch and everything are kind of apparent in this track,
which is I think really cool. It's like kind of historical in that way. You can always listen to it and hear those
one
things.
Of my favorite things is the where like there's like an attack and it cuts off really quickly and you hear like it really softly playing.
That's
I kind of
really cool.
wanted to, because I couldn't have delay in the melody at all times. So I tried to, like, with the instrument itself, make it sound like, I don't know, almost like reverb, where after the note hits, you still
great.
Hear
it's
it
It's very inventive. It's one of those techniques that you heard back in the day a lot.
Right.
It's really cool. Well, guys, it's now time to play my SNES track.
Exciting.
So yeah, you know, it's kind of... think back to what we heard Will do. It's weird. We had almost the same idea where we wanted to surprise each other with like a JRPG sounding, like a Square sounding SNES track. And it's funny that mine ended up being quite different than Will's. But yeah, for this, I kind of wanted to make something a little bit mysterious and something that was reminiscent of some of my favorite SNES scores, like Chrono Trigger and specifically Terranigma.
Sure.
So a lot of the samples I ripped for this track were from Terranigma, a few from Chrono Trigger as well. So I hope you guys enjoy my piece of music. It's called Stella's Revelation.
Thank you.
You guys are listening to Stella's Revelation, which is an original piece of SNES music that I composed.
This is great. Yeah, it's funny just how different our two pieces are. I mean, I think this one definitely borrows more influence from, like, Chrono Trigger. It's kind of groove-based.
It's much funkier, yeah.
It's a lot. And you know, the use of kind of the ethnic percussion and everything.
Sitar.
It reminds me a lot of Corridors of Time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, for me, Corridors of Time mixed with Secret of the Forest and El's theme. Those three jumbled in a little bag of fun was kind of what I was going for.
A little bag of fun indeed. Yeah, I was also thinking a lot about Secret of the Forest in mind, but I think mine felt more like Final Fantasy-ish. I kind of wanted to do something more like the theme of love, as if it segued into like Terra's theme and also
What I love particularly about, and I'll just say about those tracks that I was influenced by, Secret of the Forest, is how much it takes its time. And it's kind of just like sulking in this mysterious emotion and vibey. And that was what I wanted to capture with this. And I'll leave it to you guys.
Well, I think it's one of the cool things about music for the Super Nintendo, since everything is sort of compressed. Your brain doesn't necessarily process all the sounds all the time as like real things, because I think, you know, if all those instruments were realized, you would be like, oh, there's choir and orchestra and sitar and electric bass. And
it's
it might feel a little
conglomeration.
Eclectic.
Yeah, though. But somehow it's just this big sound.
There's something about that SNES compression that glues everything together.
Mm-hmm. Sure does.
And so even though you get really a wide variety of timbre and color, you're not necessarily always noticing it super hardcore.
Will, would you say it's a melting pot of sorts?
Ooh, good segue, Carl. Yeah, so the next thing that I'm going to play is an original piece of film music. Like I mentioned before, how I was working on those student films. Well, this one is going to be very different than The Bad Man. This was kind of like a through composed orchestral film score that I made for the film. You know, some of the projects, you know, you're able to write music ahead of time and show them themes and stuff. With this group, I was just given the film and I had to score it from start to finish. And so it was an interesting experience for me, because a lot of times when I write orchestra music, I write out, you know, the score, I use Sibelius, but, you know, writing out all the orchestral parts. For this, I knew that I'd have to work efficiently. So I just kind of wrote straight into the DAW. And so I was kind of writing it as I went. And I had some ideas at the piano of certain themes that I wanted to be carried out and developed. But the film, just to talk a little bit about it, I guess, the film is kind of about like cultural diversity, and it follows this sort of woman of color through her day. And it starts with this opening sequence that's in black and white of her just sort of walking up this staircase. And then there's a moment when everything comes into color. So it was important for me to have that first part almost muted with a little bit of like a high pass filter. And it was just piano. And then when everything comes into color, I take that filter off and add in more orchestral elements and stuff. But yeah, so I think we're going to listen to a little bit more of it than we normally would play, just because it's so kind of long form and everything. But anyways, this is a score that I wrote called The Melting Pot. Thank you. We're listening to The Melting Pot. This is an original film score that I composed this year for a student film.
Really beautiful stuff. Yeah, those very soft, subtle female choir sounds are very convincing.
Oh, thanks.
And it kind of reminded me of a lot of, for some reason, like war music.
Yeah.
Like something from like Medal of Honor or something.
Right.
You hear those.
Yeah, that theme, it starts in the horns, but it happens. It cuts to this sort of interesting thing where the camera is in the middle of this group of people and they're all sort of like holding hands and the camera's like moving around. Mm-hmm. And so there's almost this kind of like bouncy nature to what's happening to it. So the music sort of changes every time it centers on a new person's face.
That's cool.
So I kind of repeated that theme.
Is Melting Pot the name of the film too?
No, I knew the movie was going to be about cultural diversity, so I just named the track The Melting Pot. I think later they gave it some other name, but I worked on the score, again, okay, completely separate from having really much discussion with them at all.
Well, I'm excited. Now we're going to play another track, and it's related. It's from Asker, and it's related to the Atlantis stage. So this is the boss theme of that stage. It's the Atlantis boss, which is Poseidon. Again, composed by the Supermercado Brothers. So it's kind of a variation, like a really rocking, intense variation of Atlantis stage. So we hope you guys enjoy this. My favorite things was that very soft and subtle callback to the riff, the opening riff of Atlantis stage. It just happened upon
maybe
the
a little
there.
Too subtle
a little too subtle
it's so quiet
it's
that
so
you can't
quiet
tell. But what's fun about this one, we kind of knew for a lot of the boss themes in this game that they'd be variations of the actual stage music, but we wanted to try something a little different for this one, which is instead of just doing like a a more dark version of that main melody, I actually wrote a brand new melody for that A section, and then we kind of do a more minory descending version of the chorus melody, and it starts, the intro of the track starts with a little hint of it, but it's nice because it makes it feel different than the other boss theme.
Yeah, it
and
definitely
it really
does.
Gives this piece of music its own identity.
Also, I think what's really cool is we did this earlier with the Hades boss theme, which was a variation of the Hades underworld theme. I think we did the same thing where we take it up a half step and increase
right.
the tempo a lot and make it rock a lot more. I love the idea of doing that. And for whatever reason, the tempos ended up being fairly similar for the stage themes, that the Atlantis and Hades. They're both kind of slow and groovy. So
right.
it had a lot of opportunity for the boss theme to really ramp it up. And that's what he wanted. He wanted the boss themes to really be kind of intense and epic.
Yeah, I think I got to say, my favorite thing about this track, though, Carl, is really all the things that you did.
Oh, thanks.
I felt like in that that last stage theme, I really felt proud of like a lot of the stuff that I did with like the melodies and everything. But this track, I mean, everything that's great about it is really all that you did. That wonderful rocking intro, which I didn't have any hand in that at all. That really, my favorite thing is the that crazy like synthy thing. Like,
I don't know what that makes kind of Mario World-ish,
legit.
I guess.
That's like,
I don't know what that is.
It's one of my favorite things about it. Yeah,
thanks,
this is
man.
One the first time I listened to, I honestly was just kind of like gosh, all the stuff that Carl's doing, I love. And all mm-hmm. of my touches, I was really not happy with. So Carl let me kind of go back and mm-hmm. I changed some of the things I was doing for the melody, because when I heard what he was cooking up with sort of the sequencing of everything, I definitely felt like I need to step up my game melody-wise.
And then it ended up being, it was just...
And yeah, now it's one of my favorite tracks on the album.
The entire thing is just, it works really well. So
I love this project. You know what's so fun about it is that we made those first few ones like... over a year and a half ago. And then just out of the blue, the developer, his name is Benny, he sent us an email and said, okay, I'm ready for the next batch of tracks. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, are we going to be able to get back into it?
Yeah.
And it's like, honestly, we fell right back into the
And we know that's going to be the case next batch that we have
yeah,
to do.
I'm
yeah,
I'm so excited. It's such
so
a fun
So I'm going to move on to a track of mine. It's been a long time since I've played a Sonic-esque track, but this is from Sonic-esque Arranged.
Oh,
so
right.
I released last year an album of kind of a greatest hits of different tracks from all four of the original volumes, but arranged with modern instruments. And it was fun. And this is a piece of music that I've never played in any capacity. And there's actually quite a bit of, you know, since there were four of those freaking albums, quite a bit of tracks that I've never shared on the podcast. So this is a track that I'm sharing the arranged version. It's Sprawling Shipyard, which I know was one of Will's favorites when that came out in, I think originally in volume 3. But this is Sonic-esque arranged.
Yeah, this
Sprawling.
This is so good.
Sprawling Shipyard. Enjoy. You guys are listening to Sprawling Shipyard, arranged version.
I went to adjust my glasses just to realize that I wasn't wearing glasses.
You were not wearing glasses.
You know what's funny? I love this Sonic-esque arrange, but honestly, I have to say so much of my experience when listening to it is just kind of, is just like, damn, those original versions mm-hmm. are so great. Like what you did with those Genesis sounds yeah. was just so impressive. What I think is cool about this, it's able to put these pieces in a way that they don't necessarily require a specific context behind
which
them.
was my main goal,
which is
for
important
doing the album,
but like
yeah.
when listening to this one, it's just like I'm missing that
yeah,
Genesis.
No, I will say that
FM.
Like I prefer the original versions of all these tracks, and those are the definitive versions. This was just something for those melodies. I'm really proud of and mean a lot to me, so like if there's a way for someone to be able to get into it because it sounds modern and good,
sure,
then I think it was worth doing. And I had a lot of suggestions from people asking me to do that, because they just, you know, people like remixes, right? You know, so if you like an old retro sound, you kind of want to hear what it sounds like with better instruments. So you know, got a lot of suggestions by some Sonic-esque fans to do that, so had a good time with this.
It's definitely a job well done. One of my favorite ones is that wonderful kind of Japanese melody that's
Arctic
where you started
wasteland.
Yeah, where you started just with the piano. I remember that was an idea mm-hmm. that you and I had kind of talked
that's
about.
That's a really
because
fun
that
arrangement, yeah.
So good. Okay, well, I'm really excited for this next one. This is a track that I finished as Carl was walking in the door to set up the stuff for recording. I kind of decided as a little tradition, before every original showcase, I'm going to write a new NES track in the line of that.
And always wait till the last second too. Is that a tradition?
Yeah. Well, because last original showcase, I premiered a piece called Minions and Malefactors for this kind of fake game in my head called Dr. Acula's Malevolent Manor. So I decided every original showcase, I'm going to add another track to that.
That's kind of like the Man Rock stuff game I used to do. Remember?
Yeah. So this track would be sort of like the second stage in the game, and it's called The Heathenous Halls. Let's take a listen.
Another track that I think the Fallons would sign off on. This
yeah,
rocks.
I hope so. Thanks, man. Yeah, if you'll believe it, I actually just started writing it last night.
It's super devious.
I was working on finishing up that In Days of Old, and kind of in between working on the sequencing, I'm like, oh, shoot, I still have to write this NES track. And so I went to the piano, and I'm just like, oh, I'll write something in B minor. And I don't know, this kind of... I knew I wanted to do like a shuffle, like a rock kind of shuffle, but I wasn't expecting it to be that kind of horror campy.
It's spooky.
Which
it's
is
almost
exactly
even spookier
what I wanted.
Than the first one.
Yeah, because I mean, the game, the idea is that it takes place in like, it's Dr. Acula's Malevolent Manor, so it's kind of like Dracula. I wanted it to be like Castlevania meets Mega Man, but it kind of have
a
lot of horror
when
cliches.
You showed this to me today, you know what I said is like, it's like Dave Wise meets DuckTales.
I mean, that's great.
Musically, that's what it sounds like.
Because the thing is, this isn't for a real game, so
don't you
it's
guys
kind
agree?
Of wherever the music leads me, but I was actually pretty happy with how quickly I was able to get back into, because I haven't done anything in FamiTracker since the last one of these.
Sure.
And I was able to put this together pretty quickly, so
yeah, man.
It's fun.
It's like riding a bike again. Once you develop those skills, you can always go back to
I think
to
the
them.
Other thing I'm happy about, once that like little B section ended, I really contemplated, because I was running out of time, I'm just like, maybe I'll just have it loop back to the beginning, mm-hmm. but I'm like, no, I really want like a rocking
yeah.
section, and
I'm
so glad
did.
I went back to do the ding 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 because that was one of my original ideas for it, was this kind of rocking mm-hmm. shuffle with these unison riffs and
sure
stuff.
Man, well, I'm gonna play the last track that I'll share today from Back in Orbit. This is a track called Chromosphere, and it's definitely the happiest, bubbliest track on the album. It still fits the fusion vibe for sure, and it's very jazzy, but it's something that I just wanted to make one track, because most of the album is minor key. I wanted to make one track that was major and just like sunny, you know. So this is Chromosphere from Back in Orbit. Enjoy.
We'll be right back.
Cool. You guys are listening to Chromosphere from Back in Orbit. And there's a cool little solo that happens later on in the track that I'm really happy with how it turned out. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. This is my second attempt at this particular song, the slot of, you know, having something really sunny. And the first song that I have an entire song and I decided to not include it and redo it is because it was too far away from the album.
Sure.
It was too sunny and it was like not fusion-y enough. It's a cool track. I should show it to you. And there's one ostinato idea that I actually took from it and incorporated it into one of the riffs on that A section. But I'll show it to you, Will, sometime. But yeah, I like the song and it's maybe a little bit more melodic and things, but it just wasn't fusion-y enough. So this one, I'm really happy. It feels like it's still what I wanted. I wanted like a sunny, happy track to be near the end of the album, but it fits the rest of the tone.
Wonderful jazz chords. If this reminds me of any video game, it's probably like Mark Davis Fishing Master or something.
That is a wonderful compliment. A very nerdy compliment for me, though.
Yeah.
I love that game.
Well, I forget when it was, but I don't know. Sometimes it's funny, we've been doing this podcast for so long, and there's things that are really special to us, but probably to not many people. And I think I caught Carl one time saying, oh, this is just an absolute classic.
It was last
Mark
week,
Davis
bro.
Fishing
no,
Master.
No, last week I said it was Pebble Beach Golf Links, absolute classic.
Yeah, and I'm just like, maybe.
Wait
to
a
us.
Second.
Yeah, no, this totally could be a Pebble Beach Golf Links.
So you
track.
Have a track you haven't shared from Child of the Chozo, right?
Yeah, this is exciting. This is one of the final tracks in the sort of SNES chunk. Child of the Chozo is an album that's a tribute to the music of the Metroid series, and it's in sort of three parts. The first is like an 8-bit, and the second bit kind of sounds like Super Nintendo, and the last chunk is inspired by the Prime series. This is sort of like the I consider it like the little cutscene right before the final boss and then the final boss in this imaginary game. And I kind of really went all out with the ambience in this track and really kind of exploring some things I hadn't done elsewhere on the album. And this was also one of the final SNES tracks that I actually sequenced. And I knew I was onto something because I actually wrote this when I was babysitting one of our cousins. Mm-hmm. And his name is Isaac. He was asleep mm-hmm. upstairs, and I was sort of experimenting sure. with some of these eerie harmonies. And he actually came downstairs to say, "Willie, stop playing scary music."
That's
so
perfect.
I'm like, "Ooh, if it's scary, then I'm on the right track." So let's take a listen to "In the Thicket of the Hive." Listening to "In the Thicket of the Hive," sort of the final boss theme from the SNES part of Child of the Chozo.
Things are getting cray up in here, guys. Yeah. Better watch out. You got to evacuate as soon as possible.
Yeah, one of the things I was sort of inspired by, because I really...
Evacuate immediately.
I kind of wanted to do something that could kind of match the epic excitement of the music that happens when you fight Mother Brain. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of those, like, falling, descending synths.
Yeah,
so I thought it would be
bending.
Cool to make, yeah, like, this pitch-bendy, like, siren sound. And I just kind of really went all out and... A lot of the
kind I can hear it.
The musical gestures in here kind of go farther than what necessarily happens in Metroid, but it just similarly that like Underground Caves track, you know, it's like with these tribute albums, it's important to find sections of it
here,
that you can do something really new and explore a different kind of territory.
This part's groovier than anything in Super Metroid.
Right.
That part's like pretty dang funky.
See, part of it is I composed it at a much slower tempo, and so I wasn't really as conscious about how syncopated that would sound.
Bink, 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 bink,
but yeah,
ding,
I really...
Ding, ding, ding. It's like Street Fighter.
And then once it goes...
Da, 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 da,
and it's like really exciting and kind of triumphant, but to me that was sort of like you're fighting back against the I don't know, the enemy.
Funny stuff, dude. Yeah, gosh, yeah, that album is so fun. I was super, it was fangirling. I remember all over, I was texting Will like, I can't wait for you to finish this, like particularly the Prime section. I was like so excited.
I was so nervous because I mean that was, yeah, it was the summer after my senior year in high school that I like set out to do it, and I had no idea. I'd never made anything like that Prime stuff, and I had no idea how to do it. And I don't know, luckily it just feels like it was serendipity that it all worked out.
Well, I'm gonna move on. We only have a couple more tracks to play, guys. I'm gonna move on to a track of mine. It's a piano, solo piano track that I composed a few weeks back. It's called The Remaining Sky. And it sounds a little bit Japanese to me. I guess there are probably some elements about it that were probably inspired by Joe Hisaishi. Past few months, I've been listening, not only I, but like my roommate's been playing a lot of his music on our piano. So kind of his music has just kind of, I feel like it's almost always in my head, you know, whether or not I have any control over it.
He's so great.
But yeah, this was just something that I just kind of sat down and just had a really good time getting this out. So this is The Remaining Sky. Enjoy. That was The Remaining Sky, which is a solo piano piece that I composed and performed, I think, a few weeks ago. So pretty new stuff there.
That was really pretty, man. That's
Thank
beautiful.
You.
I've never heard you do anything like that before. That's just great. You know, it's funny. You couldn't have planned this more perfectly, because the last track that I'm going to be playing is also a piece for piano inspired by Joe Hisaishi.
Wow.
And I made this playlist completely separate. I had no idea you were doing this.
It's the same song, but a half step down.
No, but I think we're both inspired by similar harmonies. This is actually a piece I wrote for school. We had these two violinists that were coming in. And so I wrote a piece for two violin and piano. And sort of the instruction of it was to make something that would be really accessible for children. And since most of my music already, I feel like, is very accessible.
Yeah, you
universal. I was really trying to be thoughtful about how to do it. So I tried to have very kind of simple melody, but I was thinking of, like, I don't know, the music of Joe Hisaishi, and that, you know, writing something for children doesn't necessarily have to be like simplistic.
Yeah,
you know,
it just has to be in a whole tone scale, right?
No, but those scores are so evocative and emotional.
They're not simple at all.
It's like they have simple melodies, but yeah, they're very complex and rich with emotion.
Yep.
So I kind of felt like, okay, just because we're doing something for kids doesn't mean we have to have the kid gloves on. So this is a piece called In Dreams, and this features kind of digital violins, which I'm hoping to release this on my upcoming album and record real violin for it, but you still get a sense of what the piece is. Let's take a listen to In Dreams. This piece is called In Dreams. Once again, I was really inspired by, you know, Joe Hisaishi, but I just wanted to make something sort of simple and beautiful that, you know, both violins could kind of have sort of an equal role, and something that wouldn't be too difficult for them to play in.
Yeah, so gorgeous,
as well.
Man.
And
yeah.
They played it really well. I don't have
too bad you couldn't get a recording in that.
I did. It's just like I have like a video of it, but you know, it's not the best audio. So I thought for playing it today, it'd be better to.
Would be nice to get real violins, but I mean, it's beautiful as is. So either way, I think it works. Yeah,
thanks.
Guys, thanks a lot for indulging us today. Hopefully, you enjoyed listening to our original music. It's a nice change of pace. You know, we only do it once a season. I know we have an absolute ball sharing this stuff with you guys. It really it's really exciting and fun for us.
And I know what's kind of become fun is I think a lot of the music that we write, I mean, you can even tell from here, is honestly in spaces that we wouldn't necessarily want to always share on these kinds of episodes. These have kind of become an interesting vehicle where now it's almost like an obligation, where it's like, for me, I almost use it as an excuse to write more kind of video game type of music, because I'm not doing that as much, you know, nowadays.
Yeah, so we're going to play you guys out with a track of mine. It's called Hyper Flash. It's a very groovy, kind of quasi chiptune kind of sound here. Hopefully you guys will enjoy it, and we'll be back with you next week with another normal podcast. podcast episode. So thanks for joining us. You can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, subscribe to us on YouTube. Our website has every episode of the podcast as well as our original music. You can head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. And thanks so much for listening. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann. And yeah, Carl and I are both actually working on our own websites. So to kind of commemorate the launch of those sites, we're both going to be releasing solo albums. Which, you know, that's another way for you to, to be able to find some of our original music and some of the things we're up to. So yeah, thanks so much, guys. Just had a blast this week. So yeah, we'll talk to you next time.
Peace out.